everybody, and welcome to episode number 52 of the SmackDown Somebody. It's been a whole year. Congratulations, Sondra. It's been a year.
I mean, it's kind of been a year, but not exactly, right? Like, it's not exactly the anniversary, because 52...
I mean, this is the 52nd episode, so it's 52 weeks in a year.
Yes, but that would mean that next week would be the anniversary, because actually, like, it's July 19 today, and because of the way my brain works, I remember that July 19 was draft day. Like, I know that the draft itself happened on July 19, and that was the first episode of SmackDown Live. And I didn't even cover the draft episode, you and Robert did. So really, my one-year anniversary is in, like, 2 weeks.
Well, this isn't about your one-year anniversary. It's about the one-year... And also, we're doing it in the WWE style, right? WrestleMania 25 was the 25th anniversary of WrestleMania.
Oh, right. Not the 25th annual WrestleMania, the anniversary. They've actually... I'm glad that they've started saying, like, it's the 30... What, did we just have 33? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I was so busy calling it WrestleMania Sun that sometimes I forget. But, you know, they finally have started saying the 33rd annual WrestleMania, or the however many annual Survivor Series, instead of the anniversary, which I appreciate, because I'm pedantic sometimes, and there you are.
No.
I know, it's a shocking revelation. Shocking to the world, I'm sure.
So I've been in Canada, trying to have a holiday. How have you been?
I've been pretty well. I mean, nothing too exciting, right? Like, I just kind of go to work. I watch a lot of wrestling. I watched a really good Chikara show last night because I'm desperately trying to catch up on all the stuff on Chikaratopia before the Hour of Power this Sunday, since I don't have to work, so I can actually watch the Hour of Power live. And I'm really excited about that. So I got to see the epic, epic journey of El Hijo del Ice Cream in the main event of Aniversario School Reunion, which I know, like, three people care about, but I care about it, so I'm mentioning
it. But those three people are going to pop, you mention it. So.
Exactly, exactly. You know, so, I mean, other than that, nothing too exciting going on in my life. Just basically a lot of wrestling and trying to catch up on the Tour de France also, because that's the one real sport I like, is cycling.
There you go. That's the life of a Sondra. That's
pretty
what
much.
You get.
It's not very exciting. It's not.
Ask me what else has been going on.
What else has been going on with you, Kenny?
Nothing. I've absolutely not been trying to organize another tour before Chris Jericho. That's
okay.
Absolutely not what I've been trying to organize.
Good,
that's
because I hadn't
not
heard
something.
Anything, any rumors that there could be a really exciting announcement sometime relatively soon.
No. And there's absolutely not going to be a relatively exciting announcement once we've got dates confirmed. No way.
Nope. I didn't think anything like that was going on with you. I mean, from anything I've heard, you've just been in Vancouver, not working at all, not being in contact with people. Just
because obviously I'm of course on holiday and completely relaxing and not just working again.
Of course, because that's exactly what we thought you were going to be able to accomplish in Vancouver. I had no doubts whatsoever.
Thing is, it's like, I do try to relax.
You're terrible
then, like,
at it though.
But then the problem is my job's really fun. So so it doesn't feel like work a lot of the time, so I just end up doing stuff. Plus, you know, anyway, so we'll see. No announcements coming, though, just so you know. There's no announcements coming soon. Do not expect any announcements.
Kenny is a terrible, terrible liar.
So SmackDown episode number 52.
Can we talk about Shane McMahon getting in a helicopter crash today?
Only if we can talk about the Young Bucks tweet about only Shane McMahon can take a bump from a helicopter and somehow be unharmed.
Seriously, though, isn't it the most perfect thing? Like, I mean, it sucks that anyone has to be in a helicopter crash, but because he's fine, I feel like all the jokes about it are also kind of fair game, because how in the world does this man even exist? Like, I don't understand. He's, like, this rich guy, he's handsome, he's amazing, he jumps off of things, and now he survives a helicopter emergency landing in the ocean? Like, how is he even human?
I don't think he is. I think he's just... And what's really funny is there's a bit where on, like, the local news, like, I don't know what's happening. It feels like the police or something are talking to them, and they're talking to the pilot, and they're talking to Shane, like, what's your name? And he's like, Shane McMahon, and he has to spell his name. And then somebody goes, are you the son of Vince McMahon? And he just kind of goes, oh, yes.
He goes, yes, I am. What I thought was weirdest about that clip was the amount of time they focused on the pilot's flip-flop. That was very strange to me. But
yeah, was that supposed to mean something?
I don't know. Was it like he lost his shoe in the crash?
or they crashed because he was wearing flip-flops.
I don't know. I really wanted to know more about it because they just focused on the flip-flop for so long. No, I was talking to a buddy of mine, and I was saying, like, how is Shane McMahon human? And he cracked it, right? It's like the movie Twins, which I've never actually seen, but I know the concept. And we basically
Wait a minute. You've not seen Twins.
Have you met me? How is this surprising?
You would love Twins.
I'm sure that I would love Twins.
Wait a minute. It's about a world where Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito find out they were twins.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so what we figured out was Shane McMahon is Arnold Schwarzenegger and Hornswoggle is Danny DeVito.
Don't you dare bring Hornswoggle back into this world.
It's canon.
He's not allowed. He's terrible.
Absolutely canon.
So we are talking about the go-home SmackDown for Battleground.
Didn't feel like a go-home SmackDown to Battleground.
I mean, the problem is, like, you know, the ticket sales are really bad for Battleground. I know somebody who had bought tickets to Battleground and sold his tickets.
Really? Just because he didn't want to go?
Yeah, also because he lives in the UK and he stupidly was at the Go Home Raw for WrestleMania in Philadelphia, and at the end they were like, hey, buy your Battleground tickets at the ticket booth, and he did.
But he doesn't live in Philly. Okay, yeah, I would also sell my tickets if I lived in the UK. I wouldn't be flying over for fucking Battleground. But, I mean, I'm looking forward to Battleground. I don't think Battleground's going to be terrible by any means. I think it'll be fine. But I don't think it's going to be an epic show that I'm really looking forward to. Like, I, of all people, Kenny, was looking forward to Great Balls of Fire way more than I'm looking forward to Battleground. Something is wrong here in the world.
Well, that's because, like, even you would admit that Raw has been better. Like, some of the stories have been better.
Yeah.
So there's like three or four stories that you're like, oh, I kind of want to see how that stuff's going to play out.
I mean,
but then the problem with SmackDown is
that, you know, the lure of Joe versus Lesnar was like, yes, I really do want to see this. And of course, I mean, Braun Strowman is the love of my life. So anything.
And then that Iron Man tag team match.
That
my
was
God.
Excellent. So good. So good. So, I mean, I feel like Great Balls of Fire had more going for it and more hype leading into it, whereas Battleground just kind of feels like it could be another episode of SmackDown, especially with some of the stuff that happens on this show that's pretty baffling as to why it's happening on the show and not on Battleground. I don't really get it. But
part of the problem as well is, like, my biggest wonderment or intrigue into Battleground is, oh, I wonder what everyone's doing at SummerSlam.
Yeah, it's a problem. It very much feels like one of those pay-per-views to set up SummerSlam.
And this show, like, the thing with this show was, regardless of whether you thought it was a good show or a bad show, you could have missed this episode. And even like the Fashion Files stuff, you know, you all you need to know on Twitter is you're going to find out on Sunday who attacked Breezango. Okay.
I don't think that's fair, because everyone should be watching the Fashion Files, because they're on YouTube in full. And
they are. What I mean is, for the purposes of objectivity, there was nothing on this show that, like, was crucial to see.
True.
Generally. And that's a problem. And it was a bad go-home show.
It was one of those go-home shows where, like, I know that they're trying to talk about Battleground, but it didn't really feel like it made any of the matches must-see, or, like, I really, really need to see the conclusion to anything at Battleground, right? Like,
now, I did want to say, before we start talking about SmackDown, I want to get your thoughts on, so Talking Smack returns this Sunday, with Renee Young hosting, and her co-host will be Jerry the King Lawler. Sandra, I know that you are thrilled about this, so tell us your thoughts.
Just fuck off, WWE. Just fuck right the fuck off. What even are you doing? Is there any more of a downgrade than Daniel Bryan to Jerry the fucking King Lawler? How is this going to be useful or beneficial? If we're only getting Talking Smack once, they're just turning Talking Smack into Raw Talk. They're trying to kill it. Was that everything you hoped?
That was exactly what I wanted. The thing about, like, because obviously I like Jerry Lawler a little bit more than you do. It's not hard to do. But the problem is like,
he's awful.
Well, I didn't watch enough of it, but I've heard from a lot of people that I know and trust that when he was commentating SmackDown pre-brand split with Mauro Ranallo, and he turned heel again, he was actually pretty good. But that's always been what he was good at, was being the heel commentator. And I think the thing that killed Jerry Lawler off in terms of relevance was becoming that pre-show guy. Because because Jerry Lawler famously doesn't watch anything he's not involved in.
Right.
So, like, if he's doing the Raw pre-show, he probably doesn't even watch Raw. He just gets briefed on what he has to do for the pre-show. Or if he's on Raw, he doesn't watch SmackDown or whatever. So, like, there'd be little gaffes here and there that he would make. And it's fine. I mean, I get it. He's been doing this for, like, 50 years or whatever. But, like, I just don't think that he's I think the problem is that their panelists that they think help are JBL, Booker T, and Jerry Lawler. And I think they're all very, very counterproductive in that role.
They're incredibly counterproductive in that role because they tend to, you know, come off as either the veteran who's trying to light a fire under the talent, but it always just comes off as them talking down to the actual current superstars. And it's incredibly, I don't know, it's incredibly frustrating, not just because I don't like Jerry Lawler, but because I just genuinely don't think he's good in this role. I don't think he has anything to add. He just parrots back what Renee says when he's on these types of panels.
He's not quick enough. Because he doesn't watch all the product or know the guys enough, he's not able to be as quick on his feet
as
a Daniel Bryan or a... I mean, I like Shane now and then. I thought Shane was cool now and then.
I mean, Shane is mostly just kind of boring on Talking Smack in that kind of role. Because
he's just kind of bland.
Because he doesn't really seem like he cares that much about being there. Like, he's there, and he's relatively effective in his role as commissioner, but he doesn't seem like he's super invested or has the rapport with the other wrestlers that Daniel Bryan does, because Daniel Bryan, having worked with a lot of these people, has a different dynamic with them, which is what I think works about him so well. Shane McMahon does seem more like a removed authority figure because he's sort of supposed to be the corporate removed authority figure, right? So him actually conversing with the talent and, like, trying to get something out of them, it just doesn't always work as well. And also, Daniel Bryan's the best and you can't replace him. Does that mean Daniel Bryan's not going to be at Battleground then?
Yeah, I imagine so. But then I think that's part of the problem, right? Is that, like, Daniel Bryan is, I think part of the reason that Talking Smack is suffering is because Daniel Bryan can't be around.
Right.
And then also, but the other problem is that I think that Daniel Bryan, I think a lot of his effectiveness is him on Talking Smack. You know,
absolutely. When he's unscripted and can actually say what he wants. I mean, I'm sure there's stuff that gets him in trouble when he's on Talking Smack. And then maybe that's part of the reason it's being canceled. Who knows, right? Like, maybe they were tired of Daniel Bryan just speaking his mind and doing what he wanted. But I think that's a real shame because I think it actually helped advance so many of the storylines and it really helped some of the other performers being able to bounce off Daniel Bryan. Like, I mean, The Miz is the obvious example, but Baron Corbin as well, getting to kind of talk down to Daniel Bryan. And Daniel Bryan obviously knows his place in this, right? Like, I think another thing that's different about Daniel Bryan's dynamic is he's never trying to put himself over on Talking Smack. He's always aware of the fact that that's not his role now. Like, his role is to help the other talent and help the other talent progress. Whereas someone like Booker T or JBL, I feel like, always wants to get their shit in.
Yeah. I mean, I think the problem is, I get that Talking Smack was a niche thing. It was not, you know, one of the things everybody tuned in for. And it's more of a hardcore audience thing to watch. But I do believe that if you change the dynamic of it to, like, Jerry Lawler and Booker T, that you're going to see it dip even further. But then, do you know what? Like, in saying that, apparently the ratings for Raw Talk after pay-per-views are higher than the Talking Smack shows.
That's because they're immediately after the pay-per-views and they're on the network, yeah. So you just leave it on. Like, I had Raw Talk on after Great Balls of Fire, not because I wanted to watch Raw Talk, but just because I didn't reach for the remote to turn it off. And that's the thing with Talking Smack, right, is that
I think when you finish watching a pay-per-view, you kind of, you're open to hearing some of the performers talk.
Yeah, because you're already kind of in the mode of, like, you're watching something. So if you don't have anything else to watch immediately, then it's easy to just kind of leave it on. And you're like, oh, yeah, I'll see how this story is playing out. I mean, that's one of the reasons the Talking Smack ratings are going to be lower. I'd be curious to know about the Talking Smack post-pay-per-view ratings versus the Raw Talk post pay-per-view ratings, because I think those should be more comparable. I think more people probably watch the Raw pay-per-views than the SmackDown pay-per-views, but I think that would be a more accurate comparison, because comparing Talking Smack, the weekly television show, to a post pay-per-view Raw Talk, just, I mean, it's kind of apples to oranges, because for Talking Smack, not only do you have to turn on the network, you can't just leave something playing, because SmackDown's broadcast on the USA Network, so it's on a different platform. Not only is it on a different platform, but it's also not immediately after the show. You have to wait for fucking 205 Live to finish to watch Talking Smack.
Oh,
so you
God,
really have to watch
205
it as an
Live.
I mean, 205 Live is a problem. And the thing is, I actually kind of want to watch this past week's 205 Live, the past couple, because I've heard that they're really good. Drew Gulak.
It's never something I've said.
I know, but like Drew Gulak's whole no-fly zone thing looks really fun and intriguing, but I haven't tuned in. And
the other thing is that the other problem is that nobody in the audience seems to give a fuck about any of the 205 stuff. So a lot of wrestling is actually to do with the atmosphere and the audience, you know?
Yeah,
I mean, I think I know a lot of people had a problem with Jason Jordan being revealed as Kurt Angle's son, and I'm curious, if Jason Jordan had come out and everybody went mental in the arena, would people have been more okay with it? Or was the crowd reaction part of why they were basing their disappointment on it? I think sometimes the crowd reaction can be a part of it. But I think with Talking Smack, like, see, now that I've had the time to kind of think about it, like, I do think a monthly Talking Smack could be better. You know, if you can make sure that Daniel Bryan is on all those. But obviously, they're not able to do that for the first one. I'm curious what happens for, like, SummerSlam. What, like, do we just get a Raw Talk? Or do we get a Talking Smack? Or do we get...
But they're the same show now, Kenny. There's not a difference between Raw Talk and Talking Smack other than the set. Because if it's Renee Young and insert co-host here, that's Raw Talk. That's the exact same thing. It's just going to be a post-SummerSlam talking show. It doesn't really matter what you call it. It's the same thing.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true. I guess we'll see. Let's talk about SmackDown. I guess we need to.
I guess.
So the Punjabi prison is shown in a video. The Singh brothers come out to Jinder Mahal. They get the Punjabi prison lured into the ring. There's this weird Indian music that they play to lure the Punjabi prison. And then Jinder Mahal cuts a bit of a promo. Then the Singh brothers explain the rules. And then Jinder Mahal cuts the exact same promo that he always cuts every single week.
Mm-hmm.
And then Randy Orton interrupts him, and Randy Orton comes out. He tells him he's either the bravest son of a SOB he's ever met, or he's just not all that bright, because, you know, he wants to be locked in a prison with Randy Orton. What I did like in Orton's promo is I liked the fact that he mentioned something that you've mentioned quite a lot that you want to see involved in this, which was you wouldn't be champion without the Singh brothers, and you've now eliminated that advantage.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good thing to point out, for sure, because, I mean, that's been the whole crux of the story between Randy Orton and Jinder Mahal.
It doesn't make any more interest.
No, not at all. I was so bored during this opening segment. I tried to, like, because I didn't actually know the rules of the Punjabi prison match. I've never seen one. And so the Singh brothers are trying to explain the rules, and I rewound it, like, twice to be like, what did they say? And then every single time I realized that I was looking at my phone and not paying attention, and I was like, well, fuck it. It's not captivating enough to, like, keep me interested. I mean, the structure is a marvelous looking thing. It must be terrible to watch those matches live, though.
Yeah.
Like, can you see anything happening?
I mean, I've never been there live for one, but I can only imagine it's not great. That's part of the reason I don't like the steel cage that they use now, because I think the big blue bars before were better because you could see through it more.
The outside of the Punjabi prison reminds me some of the blue steel bars, though. Like, just,
I know, that's part of
I thought of actually, as Orton was climbing over it.
See, Orton gets up and he calls him a jacked up ass, which was good. I like that. I figured out another element of what I don't like about this, as if there needs to be more.
Right.
I think the problem is that whether you... Let's take aside, because I know if I try and say this without taking it aside, you're going to rant. Let's take aside the effectiveness of Randy Orton as a main eventer, okay?
Okay.
Put that aside. Randy Orton is a main eventer. That is what he is.
He is, that's true.
when he was on top of the cage and he's, you know, given this sort of passionate plea about, you know, he's lost everything and all this sort of stuff and he wants his title back, I realized that I just don't believe that in any world that Jinder Mahal would be the champion and that Randy Orton would have to overcome anything to beat him anywhere under any circumstance. So I don't buy any of it. And I think that's the problem. And it's, somebody had said to me about the whole Jason Jordan angle on Raw, when I'd said I liked it, they were like, well, you're a hypocrite because you didn't like the Jinder Mahal thing. And I think it's very different because Jason Jordan has been put in a high-profile position that he, you know, it's his choice. It's up to him now if he's going to succeed because he's going to be given a spotlight and that's his call. The problem with Jinder Mahal was he was given this prestigious championship that a lot of old-school wrestling fans, newer fans like Sondra maybe don't mind as much. But I know that a lot of old-school fans like myself have a real problem with the lineage of that championship now being with Jinder Mahal. Like, I have a real fucking issue with it. And when I was watching this, I was just going, I just don't believe it. Like, I don't believe any of it. I just think it's so unrealistic. And the problem is, it's not like, you know, with it's obviously it's unrealistic that Jason Jordan is Kurt Angle's son, but...
Is it, though?
Yeah, I mean, it depends how they play it, I mean, I don't mind. Like, Karan said the best thing on Facebook where he was talking about, like, you know, people who say it's unrealistic, like Kane.
Right.
You know, did you believe him?
I love you know, on Retro Raw, we're actually going through the Kane story, right? So, I mean, there's an undead wizard guy who set fire to the home of his parents and then his brother ended up being magically alive and all this stuff. But no, Jason Jordan, who is 20 years younger than Kurt Angle, could in no way be his illegitimate son.
And listen, I love bonkers wrestling stories, illegitimate child with Kurt Angle and Jason Jordan, I'm all in. But the thing with Jinder Mahal is that I just think he's boring. And I'm watching Randy Orton cut this promo and I just go, I just don't buy it. You know, I don't think it's been, I don't think that the job of creating Jinder Mahal into a star of the level that I would believe this story has worked. And that's, I don't know if that's a fault on Jinder or a fault on pushing him too hard or whatever it is, but I just want the belt away from him. And I would imagine that maybe John Cena is going to be the guy to do it at SummerSlam, but then I'm conflicted about that because as much as I want to see anybody take the belt off Jinder Mahal, you know, bring fucking Taka Michinoku and just get it away from him. But I also think that the idea of John Cena winning his 17th world championship and beating Ric Flair's record and Jinder Mahal being involved in that conversation is so sickening that it's just, I don't know what I want another month of Jinder. I think Jinder as a character is really hurting elements of SmackDown. Like, I know the SmackDown rating went up this week, so it's not hurting the TV show, but I think it is hurting the live attendance in a way.
Yeah, because I think it is, because I think there are a lot of people like you who want to be invested in the WWE title scene. Like, I mean, for people like me who are just like, whatever, we can deal with the gender situation and the rest of it can be compelling and that's fine and I'll still like the show. But it doesn't feel like they have something cohesive to build around on the show right now. And I think that the fact that their main title, their main prize, is held by Jinder Mahal is an issue. And I mean, I've never disagreed with that. I've never said that it was a great idea that Jinder Mahal was champion. I've always said it's a great idea that Randy Orton is not champion. And it's...
That has always been your main focus.
It really has. And I've wanted to give Jinder a chance to get better and more interesting and grow and tell a good story. It hasn't seemed to be happening at all. The crowd, I think, is part of the issue because, and I forget who I was having this conversation with on Twitter, but someone pointed out to me, well, I mean, Jinder is getting some good heat from the crowd, because I think I'd put something out saying, I really wish the crowd wouldn't encourage this with USA chants, because the crowd in Birmingham, Alabama was very into chanting USA, USA, and like, oh yeah, we are going to boo you because you're speaking in Punjabi, and we are going to be like, no, America is amazing and India is bad or something. And as long as they're getting that reaction from the crowd, these are the types of stories they're going to feel get good heat from the audience, right? Like, I hate the fact that boo me because I'm not from here, get so much heat. I hate it. And it's a story that's just absolutely not for me, which is weird because I should be the target demographic for this, right? Like, I am American, so I should be all like, yeah, flags. But
but it's like that. It's like that thing when wrestlers, like when John Cena comes out and he gets booed, and then he'll say something about the city that he's in, they'll go, yay!
Yeah, know, like, and I mean, I totally do that when I'm in Grand Rapids and I'm watching like a wrestling show and they're like, right here in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I'm like, fuck yeah, I'm in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and so are you. And that's an amazing thing to cheer. But that isn't the crux of a whole story, right?
I think it's just autopilot, though.
It is.
Like, I mean, you would cheer
if they're like, hey, Scotland. You'd be like, yeah, fuck yeah, Scotland.
But what I mean is, like, you know, the idea of, like, him getting good heat, I think it's autopilot heat. I think people think that's
how they're meant to respond.
Yeah, exactly. I think there's a portion of the audience who are very bored by this. There's a portion of the audience who dislike gender because he's champion. But the thing is, that's actually quite good heat to have of, you know, disliking the heel that's a champion because you don't want him to be champion. That's good. But the problem is that when gender cuts promos, it's never really followed up well. Like, can someone give him a fucking throat lozenge, please?
Right? It's an issue. Like, and he wasn't even yelling this week at all, but he seems to have some vocal cord inflammation or something going on. I don't really know what's going on there.
Maybe just can't knock on those.
I mean, you know, vitamins have side effects, apparently. But
fast vitamin C tablets, you know, I've had a couple of them before, the wee jelly tablets, just don't take that many. Just take one.
Right?
Don't take 17.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, the problem is that it's what I was saying last week, and I feel like we just constantly are having the same conversation because Jinder's just constantly cutting the same promo, but the story's not progressing. I'm so ready for it to be done. And you know, like, part of the issue with Randy Orton winning again, you know that Jinder would be entitled to a rematch. So do you really want Randy Orton to beat Jinder Mahal on Sunday?
I remember, before WrestleMania, I was like, God, SmackDown's just a great place. And then I feel like Jinder's just like... Do you know what Jinder's like? Jinder's like, you know, you have that friend, right? That's like, you're really good pals and you hang out a lot and like you get the same sense of humor and you like, you know, you both watch a TV show or whatever and you always make in-joke references to it or whatever. And then your friend starts getting out with someone and they're just the worst. And they're like, they're dull. They don't get the references. They don't like anything interesting.
And they complain that they don't get the references.
They complain they don't get the references. They like take things very, very literally. So you can't make any form of joke. They want to leave early from all the parties, so you can't hang out with your friend. That's what Jinder is. Jinder is that partner to SmackDown.
Yeah, SmackDown
is the pal that I like hanging out with. Jinder is that fucking girlfriend or boyfriend that you just go, oh, what the fuck do you see in them? Because they're so fucking dull.
Yeah, that's accurate. That's absolutely accurate. And I mean, the Singh brothers are like that girlfriend or boyfriend's like fun family that you're like, yeah, they have a pool. We can go hang out over there. But like, do we really have to have him be there at the same time?
Well, see, I was wanting to make sure when I said that there wasn't anybody listening to this who that would apply to. Luckily, there's not. So it's fine. Or is there? Anyway.
Dun, dun, dun. Okay.
So we go from the opening segment, which was the...
It was so boring.
Yeah, it was boring. To Jimmy Uso versus Kofi Kingston. Ugh, singles match of tag teams. Like, I like the feud, but this just felt like a complete placeholder. Jimmy Uso gets the win in the end.
We're just spinning our wheels here, leading it. I mean, I'm still excited about the Usos versus the New Day, but I think these singles matches in recent weeks have done more to make me bored of the Usos versus the New Day than are helpful.
I would have rather had the two singles matches than the rap battle.
Yes, absolutely.
The rap battle should have been the last thing.
I agree, because if the rap battle had happened on the go-home show to Battleground, it would have been like, yes! Yes, did you hear what he said about Total Divas and carrying Roman's bags and Rated R Super... Ah, yes! I want to see them kick the shit out of each other on Sunday, but now it's kind of like, alright, yeah, I wanted to see them kick the shit out of each other, and then I saw it in two different forms in between then and the pay-per-view, and it my excitement has waned a bit.
Speaking of which, we cut backstage to Shane McMahon, who made his one backstage appearance, which he was flown in for, that took 45 seconds, where he is with all the ladies of SmackDown, apart from Carmella. He's with all five women who are going to be in the number one contenders match on Sunday, but he said he wants to have a great match tonight. Charlotte wants to fight Lana because she cost her last week, and blah, 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 blah. But Natalia came up with an idea where she said that Charlotte should face Becky, and then Charlotte had quite a funny moment where she was like, no, 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 we're not going to fight Becky. I'm not going to fight Becky. That's not even going to be competitive. And Becky's like, what? And then Charlotte's like, I've beat you every time. And then she's like, your dad was in the corner. She's like, people change. It was good. It was funny.
I liked the dynamic.
And so we're going to get that match. I liked the dynamic with Becky and Charlotte. You could have set the other three on fire, and I probably wouldn't have noticed.
The dynamic between Charlotte and Becky is very interesting to me, and I feel like it could lead to a Charlotte-Becky program eventually down the road, which is what I hope happens. The rest of this is absolute dog shit, and I hate it a lot.
Because Tamina's dog shit, and Lana's dog shit, and Natalia is irrelevant.
Yeah, so, I mean, one of the issues I had with this segment, other than it just being, you know, let's gather all the women to be catty again. I mean, for Natalia to be catty, that makes sense. She thinks she's a cat, but the rest of them, no. But my issue is that you have Charlotte, who's supposed to be kind of a babyface, right? Like, she's sort of a tweener. She's more just like she is Charlotte, and she's an entity unto herself, which seems to be the prevailing character traits of SmackDown and Raw superstars lately.
I want to give Charlotte props. I think the way that she handles her character is spot on. Like, she's just enough between heel and babyface that I like the dynamic of what she's doing. It's to me, makes her the most interesting person on SmackDown right now because there's shades of gray to her. And interesting.
Yeah, I'm not complaining about it. I'm just saying that, like, they're sort of trying to present her in a babyface role, but she's kind of doing the Steve Austin thing where she's not really a babyface, right? Like, she will still cheat, and she will still be kind of dastardly, because that's Charlotte, and that's what she does, and I'm glad that she hasn't just become, like, happy, smiley Charlotte Flair, who loves everybody and is really disingenuous, because that wouldn't be true to her character, it wouldn't be true to what we know of Charlotte in the past. So it kind of makes sense that Charlotte's like, I want to face Lana, because, you know, she's annoyed at Lana for costing her last week, and also she probably wants an easy match, right? Because that's kind of how I took it.
Yeah, also, easy match. 10 seconds.
But my issue is, like, do you really want the baby faces being like, I want to face the really shitty wrestler and have an easy match? Shouldn't baby faces be a little more valiant and willing to fight? Like, it makes more sense for Charlotte to be that way. But then for Becky, when Shane's like, nobody's fighting Lana tonight, and then Becky's like, no, because somebody's going to be fighting Lana tonight, right? And she points to herself. It's like, why does Becky want to fight Lana? Shouldn't Becky want actual competition? That's like, one of the hallmarks of Becky Lynch has always been she's basically kind of how Bayley was in NXT a little bit. She's that fiery babyface who's an underdog, and she gets screwed all the time and people turn on her, but damn it, she's going to fight and she's going to show heart and she's going to do it her way. And I feel like Becky and Charlotte being together, they're kind of almost turning into the mean girls of SmackDown, and I don't want that for Becky. I know Becky has a history with this, like, because Becky did team with Sasha Banks and whatnot in NXT, so she has done that character before, but I think Becky's just such a good babyface that I don't necessarily want dickhead Becky Lynch.
I mean, it didn't come across that way to me, but, I mean, to be honest, I thought it was funny that they wanted Lana, because I was like, well, yeah, like, why would you want to face one of Tamina and Natalya when you could get them on Sunday? Like, just, there's no point, there's no... Like, it didn't occur to me that it made them heelish. But, you know, we can interpret things different ways. I think that Charlotte and Becky are by far the most interesting people. And I like that Charlotte was trying to kind of say, you know, I've beaten Becky before and there's no reason for her to face me. Their dynamic is pretty nice.
Yeah, their dynamic was good. I like that because it sets up future dissension, too. Potentially, and I want this to continue because the unlikely alliance right now of Charlotte and Becky, just it came about organically, but you know that behind the scenes they're actually really, really good friends, so it seems natural that, yeah, like, they used to be in, you know, team PCB or whatever, and
the team sorority or whatever.
Yes, the submission sorority.
Oh God, that was great. Well,
yeah, it was so good. But you know, it makes sense that they, you know, they used to be friends and now they've kind of come together again. And it seems like there are still tensions between them. And I'm hoping that that story gets told in some sort of, you know, way to develop characters and have actual storylines and individual feuds instead of just lumping everyone together all the time. I'm just, that's what I'm desperate for.
We all are. Chad Gable's up next. He was having an interview to respond to Jason Jordan being the son of Kurt Angle. He talks about he wasn't told ahead of time. But you call after Raw, now he understands. He's supportive of them. They're supportive of each other. He was asked what the future holds, and he said he doesn't really want to tell anybody yet. So,
which means I don't know. But I liked this interview segment, though. I was very glad. The only thing I wanted from SmackDown this week, well, there were two things, because I knew that there was going to be the Fashion X Files, and I was really excited about that. But the other thing I wanted from SmackDown that I wasn't sure we were going to get was Chad Gable responding to Jason Jordan being Kurt Angle's son. And we got it in a very nice, like, they don't usually do these kinds of sit-down interview segments for people that they don't have something for or that they don't want to spotlight in some way. So that gives me hope that maybe there could be good things on the horizon for Chad Gable. And, I mean, I don't think I've actually really talked about how I feel about the Jason Jordan Kurt Angle situation. I love it. I got tweets from people saying, like, oh, Sandra's going to be so upset. She's going to cry. She's going to be so mad at this. I'm not mad at all. Like, it bums me out that American Alpha is split up. It bums me out that that has to happen. But at the same time, American Alpha hasn't been getting any television time. We've seen a couple kick-ass singles matches from Chad Gable recently on SmackDown that I've really loved. And it was pretty obvious that they were going their separate ways from the last couple weeks of SmackDown television, right? Which is why I kind of figured that this might be the reveal and not like Stephanie or Dixie or whatever. I prefer this to Stephanie or Dixie for sure, because if it gives Jason Jordan a chance on Raw to get a spotlight and to be highlighted in a program, I think this is what makes it very different from the gender situation. It's not like they've given Jason Jordan the world title because he's Kurt Angle's son. They've just given him a spot on the card to tell another story and highlight him. And I feel like his natural charisma and wrestling ability can shine through if he's given the chance to do that. And I feel like, I mean, if people see him wrestle good matches and tell good story and have good charisma, then they can gravitate toward him. And I like that he's getting the chance to do that. And for Chad Gable on SmackDown, if he can kind of do the same thing, I don't know what kind of story they're going to tell with Chad Gable, but I like the idea that maybe he can be highlighted in a singles feud. I hope he doesn't go the way of, say, Ty Dillinger and Aiden English just feuding on pre-shows constantly. But I like the idea that both of these guys are going to get an individual spotlight. And I also like the fact that they split up the tag team at a point where the tag team wasn't really doing anything, but they didn't have it. They didn't require it to be like Chad Gable turns on Jason Jordan or Jason Jordan turns on Chad Gable or anything like that. You can have an amicable split of a tag team with people just going their separate ways, right? Like, it's the Ryback-Soul formula. Or even when Team Hell No split up, when Daniel Bryan and Kane had that conversation backstage of like, what's next for us? I don't know. I think that's a really rare thing to happen. I like the fact that they're addressing the tag team split without it having to be one versus the other, because then there's opportunity in the future for them to come back together. Like, how big is the pop going to be if Jason Jordan saves Chad Gable from something, or if Chad Gable shows up to be in Jason Jordan's corner on Raw and that's how he like makes a switch? I don't know. I like the possibilities that it presents.
Yeah, I think I talked with Finn Martin earlier on today for the Personal Podcast this week a little bit about it. I think that Chad Gable has a good chance of doing something decent. I always kind of saw more in Jason Jordan, which I know is probably like a very minority perspective, but the match with AJ Styles that Chad had a couple of weeks ago really kind of opened my eyes to him, and I think he's really good. And yeah, I think he's going to do well. I don't think he's going to be propelled to the main event or anything, but I think he could have a good mid-card spot. There's a couple of people he could work
Chad
with.
Chad Gable versus Alexander Rusev, I wouldn't be angry about it.
Yeah, but there's a lot of people he could feud with. You could see him feuding with Mike Kanellis at some point, or Baron Corbin, or I know you're going to hate it, but Finn had said, you know, it wouldn't be the worst idea for him to do a little something with Dolph Ziggler first, because it's a good guy for him to beat and to establish himself. I would rather see him beating Dolph Ziggler on the program than seeing him just kind of not doing anything. So
I would too. I would just rather have, you know, anyone but Dolph Ziggler.
Anyone but Dolph.
I mean, him versus Baron Corbin, I don't think would be a bad idea, though.
So we go from there to Mike Kanellis gets his in-ring debut. He's got Maria by his side. Maria has this like awful, huge love heart necklace. Mike Kanellis' gear is incredible.
I love his gear. I love it so much.
You know it's bad, though, if like Mark Meadows watching it going, wow, he's put his wife over a bit much. You know? Which is essentially what this is. So
I didn't think of it like that, but that's so funny. I love everything about his gear. I love that it says M&M Forever in a heart on one side of his tights. I love that it's like a picture or a, you know, design of her on the other leg. I love that it's her on the back of his jacket that's covered in lip prints. I love the big lip prints on his ass, like Billy Gunn style. I love everything about his gear. It's amazing. It was my favorite part of this.
They are an awfully sickening act, which is great. So it's going to be Mike Kanellis versus Sami Zayn. They're going to have the match straight away. And the match goes about 6 minutes or so. And Sami's kind of got the upper hand. He's going to go for the Helluva kick. When Maria jumps in and sort of like stands in the corner with her arms on the ring ropes, like shielding Mike, which is like, is really funny to see, like, that she's in there just like shielding herself. Because obviously, Sami Zayn is not going to Helluva kick Maria Kanellis.
I mean, he totally should, but he's not.
He should, but he's not. So that kind of gives Sami a little bit of a distraction. And as Maria's getting out, Mike smacks Sami in the face and then hits him with a sort of like fireman's caddy powerbomb thing that's called the Power of Love, of course. And gets the win in 6 minutes. I was fine with this. You know, I know the program's going to continue, and I like the pairing of Sami and Mike. I think they're fun together, so I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes.
I like the pairing of Sami and Mike. I like the story between Sami and Mike. I like Maria being involved with Sami and Mike. What baffles me about this is why this happened on a random episode of SmackDown and not at the pay-per-view. Because I feel like this was a feud that I was really looking forward to culminating at the pay-per-view. Did they announce that this match was going to happen?
No.
They didn't, right? Because, I mean, granted, I haven't been looking at wrestling news sites all that much lately, so I could have missed it. But I just don't understand the decision of paying off this story. Like, this seems to be a sort of payoff. Like, I know that it's not the payoff. I know that we're going to get more matches with these two, especially because of Maria's interference and everything. But I just feel like it would have had more of a spotlight if Mike could have debuted at Battleground and not on random episode of SmackDown before Battleground. It's like, here's this match. You know, we're going to try and get you really hyped for this pay-per-view by showing you a match that you're going to see again. It's one of my least favorite things that WWE does. And the match was good. It was fine, but it was only about 6 minutes, like you said, and it wasn't anything spectacular. I feel like they could have done more with it. And it's not like there wasn't more progression to be done. Like, maybe they should have had the vase situation happen this week instead of last week. Maybe they should have, I don't know, just had another backstage segment escalating things this week. Just have a backstage segment where Shane McMahon sets up the match or something. Like, I shouldn't complain about getting to see a Sami Zayn match on SmackDown, and I'm not complaining about that. It's just,
maybe they just wanted to shake up the formula. Maybe they wanted to shake up the formula rather than having it always, like, you know, leading to pay-per-view match that they do the first leg of it on the show here. I mean, I'm not saying it's a great move, but maybe that's why they're doing it. I don't know.
It didn't seem like a big blow-off, or like it was presented as this huge blood feud or anything. But I don't know. I just feel like it dilutes it, because I kind of wanted to see a big, like, confrontation between Sami and Mike, right? Like, maybe see a brawl or something this week. I know that they keep doing brawls with Shinsuke Nakamura and Baron Corbin, so maybe they just didn't want to have too many brawls. I don't know. I was just underwhelmed by it.
At SummerSlam, I want to see Mike Kanellis and Maria, and I want a massive love heart, like the size of a house, to descend from the ceiling.
Oh, yeah, for their entrance?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to see. Okay, I want to talk about something that really annoyed me. John Cena's promo. This was the most obnoxious, patriotic, nauseating thing I've heard in a long time. John Cena comes out, and he's got a flag match with Rusev, which is fine, but it's not exactly going to set the world on fire. If this feud was John Cena. I mean, imagine that characters have shifted time. Imagine we're in Shikara, it's all shifted to another time or whatever. Uh-huh. And imagine John Cena is facing Sergeant Slaughter, an Iraqi sympathizer. And it's a big, big main event match. Then I can maybe understand referencing 9/11.
Right?
But to reference it for a fucking shitty flag match that no one gives a fuck about, it was so classless, so disrespectful.
He needs to beat Bulgaria because 9/11. I mean, seriously, I was so angry. I was so angry at this.
I mean, come on. And I know John Cena's just trying to hype people up, but come on. I mean, what a pile of shit.
He basically made it sound like Alexander Rusev was a terrorist.
I know, but the thing was, he said, America's a land where you can come from whatever you want and make some of yourself. You mean like Rusev?
You mean like Bulgaria? Apparently that's not okay, and it's not okay to come here and still love your country.
What have Bulgaria ever done to anyone except for offer a £200 all-inclusive holiday from Thomas Cook? A good fucking deal. That's all they've done.
Oh, this was infuriating. I was surprised that he didn't just like break out into the actual national fucking anthem in this promo.
Why didn't John Cena just get a mannequin and have it draped on an American flag and fuck it? Because that's what he did here.
Pretty much. This was so shit.
Because, say what you want about Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan was not fucking comparing beating somebody in a random fucking match to 9/11.
Well, 9/11 hadn't happened yet, but he wasn't comparing it to the Gulf War or whatever.
None of that shit. And, they did the angle in 1991 where Sergeant Slaughter, set fire to the Hulk Hogan's shirt because they would not dare do it to the flag because people in America are fucking weird about that flag. Sorry, guys, you are. It's just a fucking flag. Get over it.
It's definitely... I come from, a family with a lot of military people in it, so I definitely get the flag thing, but...
John Cena here was the antithesis of what... Right, here's the issue, and I know we have a lot of listeners from America, and I don't take offense to this.
I'm from America, and I am agreeing with you 100%, but...
I love America, right? But the problem is, see the way John Cena was in this promo? The rest of the world look at you and go, fuck's sake, chill out. Because we don't care if you love your country. Love your country. But you know what? Your country's run by Donald fucking Trump. Get a fucking grip of your life. This was pathetic. And it's like, anybody in the world, we think we've got problems. Look at America and just laugh. Like... John Cena stands here and he sounds like every stupid fucking military jock that he's like, this is a country that stands for freedom. Does it? Waterboarding people? Okay. stop making out like it's like, it's.
Oh, I wish I could defend anything about that. I can't. I can't defend any of it. I just can't.
John Cena is the husband of a family who praises American values but really goes to a prostitute to get fucked up the arse with a strap on. That's what John Cena is. That's what he is. That's what this is. Do you know what America is? America is people like AJ Styles. Well, no, let's talk about that. America is people...
Do you really want to go there?
America's people like Braun Strowman and Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar and normal fucking people.
I love that you just said Braun Strowman, Roman Reigns, and Brock Lesnar and then said normal fucking people.
You know what? They're more fucking normal than John Cena here. He's fighting a flag match against a guy that's done nothing, and he's comparing it to the Great Depression and 9/11, and saying that if he can't lift the flag, that everyone will... Nobody fucking cares, John!
No, nobody not at all. And the worst thing is,
I know what it's leading. I know exactly what this is. This is step one to John Cena not just conquering Bulgaria, the non-threat that they are, but then he can conquer India.
You know what? You're probably right.
And you know what?
Boy, does it make me sigh.
As much as this all pisses me off, John Cena, if you beat that fucking Canadian fake Indian, I will cheer you, sir. I will do your little mad military waves thing that you do, and I'll pretend I'm on board because I want the belt off that prick. But this was horseshit. What did you think, Sandra?
Pretty much exactly what you said. I hate this.
I feel like I escalated in a rant there. Sorry.
You did, but it was wonderful and it was accurate and it's so frustrating. I think my least favorite thing sometimes when I hear these pro-American rants is exactly what you're saying, right? Like, John Cena's Mr. Everyone of every race, color, creed, religion, sex, gender, identity, orientation, everyone's welcome and amazing, except for Bulgarians, though. And, like, if you're a man who's fighting me in a feud, I'm definitely going to say you don't have a penis because that's the biggest insult in the world. And also, I'm probably going to compare you to an animal. And also, like, John Cena is just very infuriating when he's like this. I really like John Cena a lot of the time. I think John Cena is incredibly talented. I think John Cena is very, very good at a lot of things that he does. But this is the most infuriating version of John Cena. And it was just, it was incredibly frustrating to hear, especially invoking 9/11 for a fucking flag match.
I will test the lines of humor sometimes with taste, right?
Akeem and the Big Boss Man, what?
But like, all seriousness, I just think that's too far. I think that using that, if it was a program in wrestling that had developed enough heat that you could use that, then fair enough. But when you're using 9/11 to make people care about a flag match on a wrestling show, out of any context, it just comes across as really tacky.
It's incredibly tacky. Like, it's incredibly tacky.
I'd watched John Cena earlier. Right, so one of my guilty pleasures, and I don't really care, I like watching the clips on YouTube from The View, that television show with all the women in America that shout at each other.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly because Whoopi Goldberg's on it, and she hates most of the things they talk about. So when they have to talk about, like, pop culture, she just, like, rolls her eyes. And she's kind of my spirit animal. But, so I'll watch their YouTube clips. And John Cena was on The View on Monday. And it's funny because he talked about America. And somebody asked him about America because he'd asked him about America. And he said, you know, well, the thing about America is that, you know, anyone should be able to come here and make a name for themselves and whatever. And he said a really nice thing. And he said a really nice kind of inclusive message for Americans. And just kind of said, you know, I think right now, with how tense things are, that we should really be reminding people of why America is the greatest country in the world. And I was like, yeah, America's fucking great. And I was on board with his message. And then he comes on this show and just shits all over his message. I know it's like the character version of John Cena, but yeah, it just didn't work for me at all.
Yeah, no, it doesn't work at all. And that's the thing, is that I've heard John Cena. I mean, John Cena did that video on July 4th last year that was about love, right? Like, all-inclusive love, and how we need to remember what makes America great in the first place, and how it's, you know, everyone, like, being inclusive and,
yeah,
you know, celebrating tolerance and diversity and all that sort of stuff that I love, right? And that's the John Cena I want to see, not the John Cena who's like, let me lift my fucking flag and your country's bullshit because you're not from here, even though I just said that we welcome people.
John Cena, ladies and gentlemen, that's it. John Cena, when he's got something to sink his teeth into, is really good. But when John Cena is Mr. Pro-America, it's like...
I feel like John Cena, when he has something to sink his teeth into and can do something organic and real, then he gets really, really good. But this is one of those situations where he has to just go back to, like, the Casio keyboard of John Cena promos and hit number 5 and be like, America! And
part of the reason that I think, biased as I am, that I think that Hulk Hogan worked better in this role is because Hulk Hogan didn't really, as a character, have a lot of depth. Like, his whole thing was he is Mr. America. Well, you know, I mean, literally and figuratively.
It's true.
But like, it worked for him. But John Cena's capable of so much more, which I think is why sometimes you go, come on, John, you can do better than this.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's move on because we can talk about it forever. AJ Styles and Nakamura backstage having a promo because they're in the main event tagging together. Nakamura looks at the US title and said that next time he does an open challenge, Nakamura will answer, and it made me think maybe we're getting them for the US title at SummerSlam. Yay!
That would be very cool. I mean, it seemed like they were leading to AJ Styles, John Cena at SummerSlam, but I like the tease of multiple contenders wanting to answer the open challenge, because that means that we don't know where it's going, and we could get some of these killer matches, and AJ Styles, Shinsuke Nakamura, I am not going to complain about that. I really like seeing these two interact, because I feel like they're playing on their history well enough that, because I don't watch New Japan. And it's not because I don't like New Japan or don't want to watch New Japan. It's because there is so much wrestling in the world and I just cannot take on another show, because once I get invested in a thing, I get really invested in a thing, right? And I just don't have time to get really invested in another thing. So mm-hmm. I haven't seen the history of AJ Styles and Shinsuke Nakamura, but I know enough about it because obviously paying any attention to the world of wrestling, you know that there's history between AJ Styles and Shinsuke Nakamura. And I think that they're playing on it really well on TV, not going into like... They don't have to explain the whole history, but they're definitely teasing, yeah, there's something there, and it could be really friggin' cool if we capitalize on that. And there's just a tension between them when they're interacting in these backstage segments, having to tag together and whatnot. It's cool, and I like the dynamic, and I cannot wait for it to continue.
Then we have the match with Becky Lynch and Charlotte. It goes about 7 minutes, and the story in the end was that Becky Lynch kept trying to get the disarmer locked in, and eventually she did get it fully locked in with nowhere for Charlotte to go, and Charlotte taps. Becky beats her clean in the middle, and then post-match, Tamina comes in and ruins everything, and the heels attack the babyfaces, and that's kind of your story. But, well, I mean, the heels were attacking, and then Tamina ended up hitting Natalya with a super kick, so Tamina stands tall, blah. And then that led into Naomi doing an interview backstage where she said that she'll be the first to congratulate whoever wins the match on Sunday, even though she's not in a match herself. And then Carmella interrupted to say that, you know, wherever she goes, Carmella and the briefcase are not far behind. What did you think of this whole thing together as a final go-home thing for the women's five-way on Sunday?
I don't think it was all that effective at building the women's five-way, but I was really glad to see an actual singles women's match on SmackDown, especially a good one. It made me want more of Charlotte versus Becky. It made me want more of individual feuds again, which I'm just going to say on repeat until they give it to me, because seriously, this is ridiculous. Like, see what is possible when you put Charlotte and Becky Lynch in a match against each other, and it's really good, and, you know, there's that unlikely allies slash opponents dynamic between them, which makes it compelling. It made me just want to get past the five-way at Battleground more than it made me want to see the five-way at Battleground. I like Carmella kind of popping up and being there to antagonize Naomi. I like that quite a bit. I think Naomi was pretty good in her little promo. It was the standard, like, I'm here to glow kind of a thing, right? Like, it's the same kind of stuff Naomi always says, but I like Naomi as a babyface champion. I think she does well. I wish she had something to do at Battleground instead of just sitting back with her title. I hope they don't put... They're probably going to put her on commentary, aren't they? I hope they don't, because I just don't know if that's where she's going to shine the most. But who knows? Maybe she could surprise us. I just want to be done with this, though. I just want to be done with this whole multi-woman clusterfuck. Tamina and Lana standing tall... Or Tamina standing tall. Like, nobody wants to see that.
Nah. Nobody. But in a nicer note, we did get the Fashion X Files.
The truth is not H.
They were dressed up like Mulder and Scully, obviously. Tremendous.
Muldango.
Tremendous bit of paper on the board of a picture of Pat Patterson with Rio Tournament? ?
Amazing. I did like that. I also liked I Want to Believe.
Yeah, I also liked the Hornswoggle picture with Anonymous GM?
Yeah, that was good.
So anyway,
Our truth is out there.
A blinding light appears over their heads. Turns out it's the delivery guy. Well, no, before that, they hear a noise in the corner, and they're like, "Oh my god, what is it?" And they open the curtain, and it's Aiden English practicing his singing.
My heart melted.
Aiden English did play it very well. He's like, "Do you mind?" And they were like, "It's just English warming up." Turns out the blinding light was actually the delivery guy who turned on the light. Fandango thinks he's an alien, just starts saying he looks so human. He gives him the box. The only problem is, like, why was the box open? Like, it's a bad delivery service.
It's a bad delivery service for sure. But do you think whoever is delivering the severed head of their horse from last week is really paying all that much attention to packaging?
True. I'm just saying FedEx would get it there in a better state. So yeah, the head of the horse has been castrated and, you know, killed. I can't believe I'm talking about a fucking horse.
Anyway. I love wrestling. This is my favorite.
Yeah. And for people who were saying Jason Jordan and Kurt Angle wasn't realistic enough, freeze Angle.
Hey, okay, I'm just saying the horse disappeared, and it was very traumatic for them because they needed to ride the horse to get back to the office, and then they had to walk Kenny, and it was a cherished member of the Fashion Police team, obviously, even though we'd never seen it before, but I felt that they had a good dynamic with the horse. When that horse got stolen last week, I was emotional about it. I wanted to know who stole the horse, and now this dastardly villain has taken their beloved horse, their beloved mode of transportation and friend, severed the head of the horse, and delivered it in a box. How are you not compelled by this?
I mean, if that's not an advert for why you shouldn't live in America, I don't know what is.
Oh.
Okay, I'm kidding. It's a very good summation of everything, actually. So the horse head is there, and then there's a note in it that says Battleground. So we're going to find out on Sunday what the reveal is. Now, my friend, our mutual friend, Oliver, actually sent me a message, and he had a prediction of who he thinks it is.
Who does he think it is?
And I think he may be onto something. He thinks it's going to be the reunion of Luke Harper and Eric Rowan.
I'm not against it.
Who else is there?
Nobody. Nobody at all. I know some people are floating the idea that maybe it's one of Tyler Breeze or Fandango, given WWE's love for splitting up tag teams, but I don't think that's true. And the reason I don't think that's true, and the reason I also don't think it's the Ascension, is if you look back at the Ascension edition of the Fashion Files, of Fashion Vice, right? Which, yes, I've seen like 5 times, so I know it very well. They're interrogating the Ascension, and, you know, they give the cheese platter to Connor, and they're both in the room when they're interrogating the Ascension, although I think Tyler Breeze might leave at one point. But they're both in the room interrogating, and they both come back to find the office trashed, and the Ascension has been there the whole time. So if it's if it is Tyler Breeze or Fandango, it has to be Tyler Breeze, because he's the one that left the room when they were interrogating the Ascension. But, like, I don't think it's either one of them, because...
Also, if it is one of them, it has to be Tyler Breeze, because it's Fandango's horse.
It's Fandango's horse, and also Tyler was the one that got attacked. But do you really think that they're going to do that when Big Cass just did the whole I attacked myself thing on Raw?
I don't know.
Because I don't think that's plausible. I just don't. And also, I don't want them to split up, because it would break my heart, and I would have to think very long and hard about whether I could continue with the SmackDown summary.
I would have to think very hard. Oh my god.
But seriously, they're the best part of SmackDown right now. Like, they're the only thing that I actually want to tune in to see. And splitting them up would make no fucking sense. They're so good together. Like, I wonder if it was the New Day.
No. They're not going to turn the New Day heel.
It's a better idea than splitting up Breezango. But I think Harper and
Rowan... Why does that actually have to be the two choice?
Well, no, I don't think that should have to be the two choices. I mean, it's either going to be something out of, like, complete... It might be the Hype Bros. Maybe it was Mojo Rawley. Actually, you know what? Mark Tucker sent me the best thing on Twitter. He sent me the best scenario. And let me find it a second, because it involves time travel and is my favorite. So, this is Mark Tucker said, okay, I think it's the future fashion police from the year 2045 come back in time to give their younger self the motivation to give up their game and win the tag team titles after they'd spent over 20 years goofing around and not living their potential. It'll culminate in the two teams facing off, with the older team pushing to their limits. Modern day Breezango go on to win and win the gold. Older Breezango fade away, smiling, pouting, and wiggling their hips. Fashion police go on to beat the New Day record and change the space-time continuum. But that's just a guess. It'll probably be Mojo.
Mark Tucker's theory, sponsored by cocaine.
Sponsored by best booking idea ever.
It is a fun idea, I'll give you that.
I really like it.
We go from the fun of the Fashion X-Files, which we'll get the reveal on. I mean, the thing I'm actually most looking forward to on Sunday is the reveal of all the stuff.
Absolutely.
We're also getting Aiden English versus Ty Dillon on the pre-show, blah.
Which, to be fair, the introduction video for that with Aiden English singing it is amazing. I'm kind of annoyed, though, that they're just fighting each other on pre-shows for no reason. Put it this way,
I have watched all the pre-show matches in the last 3-4 months, and I'm probably just going to miss this one. Yeah. Because I've seen it. Main event time is Baron Corbin and Kevin Owens teaming against AJ Styles and Shinsuke Nakamura. It basically felt like a house show match, and in the end, AJ Styles was battered by Kevin Owens, and Kevin Owens and Baron Corbin got the victory, and they celebrated to close the show.
I mean, this was a good match. It was fun to watch, but it wasn't anything I could really get invested in, because it doesn't matter, really, right? It's just, hey, we have feuds going on, so we're in a tag team main event. It was fine. It just, the wrestling was good, which I like, but it did feel more like a house show match than a main event that really got me hyped to see the individual feuds at Battleground.
This show was a big old thumbs down for me. John Cena ruined it. There was so much blah stuff on here, and it's all headed up by Jinder Mahal's champion in a Punjabi prison against Randy Orton. Pretty much all the things I do not need in my life.
I mean, I thought it it was an easier watch for me than last week. I don't know why last week felt like more of a slog for some reason, but I think there was more to like on last week's show. I mean, this is also it's a thumbs down for me too. The Fashion X Files was incredible, and I really did like Charlotte versus Becky, but again, as a go-home show too, like to judge it as a go-home show, it really didn't make me very excited for the pay-per-view, even though I am looking forward to the matches on the pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm.
It just... Well, other than I'm actually kind of looking forward to the Punjabi prison match because I hope it is a shit fest full of shenanigans that's just as ridiculous and over the top as it can be. Because
do you know what I was thinking about?
Why bother?
I was thinking about can you imagine if I'm sitting watching and I'm just like, oh, this is so shit, and all of a sudden,
Kali comes
back. Oh my god, I would lose my mind.
Are you doing a reaction video for Battleground?
I need to try and find some equipment, but yeah, I probably should.
You probably should just in case. I mean, you don't have to release it if nothing happens, but...
There is still footage that I've not allowed to be released yet of my reaction to Jinder winning the championship.
Is there?
Yeah.
You didn't show me this.
Of course I didn't. I'm not showing anybody that. It's because Corey took it.
I feel like you're holding out on me. Oh, I need to get in touch with Corey then.
And he was like, I'm putting that on the internet. I was like, you're fucking not.
Oh, I'm messaging Corey today.
Anyway, Sandra, where can people find you on the old Twitter machine?
Find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. And we'll be talking about Battleground on Monday on patreon.com/InsideTheRopes, along with other bonus content. Loads of stuff going up there. The Power Slam podcast, for now, is still released a day early on Patreon.
Yeah,
it's still going to be a day early, even though it's going to be on iTunes.
Yeah, it'll be on iTunes on Fridays, but it'll still always go out on a Thursday on Patreon. We're going to have a new archive interview up from 2012. Tomorrow, we also just put up the WWE Network's collection of greatest matches ever, where David and I talk through them and decide at the end of each match whether we think it should be in consideration to be one of the greatest matches ever.
Oh, interesting.
So, yeah, get on board with all that stuff, and then Sandra and I will be back on Friday with Retro Raw, and then back on Monday on Patreon in the $3 level for the Battleground review.
It feels kind of good to be actually back on schedule. This is the first on-time SmackDown summary we've done in, seems like, a month.
I know, it's being in America is... I mean, to be fair, I should probably be more on the ball. But the other thing is, in my flat that I lived in before, I couldn't really do stuff all the time, but it's my new flat that I'm in, because obviously I moved again. It's a more even schedule, so we should be able to get everything done pretty much on time.
It's kind of nice. It's refreshing. I mean, it's not like it was one of our faults. Like, it was kind of on both of us, because I was in Metropolis, and you were at Download,
and we both were Goldberg.
Then I went to Scotland, and then we were with Goldberg, and like all sorts of stuff has happened. But we're back on track. We're back getting things done on schedule, and it feels good.
It does. Also, head over to our YouTube page where you can hear AJ Styles talk about what he thinks of Talking Smack, and Eric Bischoff from last summer talking about the magic of Talking Smack and that Miz promo from last summer and why he thought that really captivated the audience. So go check that out. YouTube.com/InsideTheRopes.
Yes, and I liked the AJ Styles clip as well.
Thank you.
That was quite good.
Okay, have a good week, everybody. We'll be back on Friday to talk Retro Raw, where Sandra begrudgingly talks about 1997.
It's the joy of my life.
Bye!